Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the picture, what I've left behind. You once again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know just what you have done.
Well, good evening, and thank you so much for joining us this evening on the Stop Child Abuse Now Talk Radio Show, sponsored by NASCA, which stands for the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse. It is Monday, July 26, 2021. My name is Penelope Bennis. I am from Bellevue, Washington, and on my host team tonight is none other than Pamela Elaine Lockridge, from Louisiana. So thank you, Pamela. And tonight is special guest night. That is the type of show we're having this evening, and we have a very special guest this evening. Her name is Natasha Mason, and she's from East Haven, Connecticut. Before I tell you a little bit more about Natasha from what she provided us with her from her bio, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about NASCA. And before I go into NASCA's mission statement, I want to invite anyone that's streaming in and listening who may wish to be a member of the panel. I'd highly encourage you to do so. Pamela will draw you in from the back line so you can have an opportunity to interact with our special guests. The number to call in to be a member of the panel is area code 6-595-2118. So again, that number is 646-595-2118. And we would be more than happy to have you join us. I want to talk a little bit about NASCA. So the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse is all about child abuse trauma prevention, intervention, and recovery. We have a single purpose at NASCA. It's to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent and physical abuse, emotional traumas and neglect, and we do so with two goals. The first, educating the public, especially as related to helping society get over its taboo at discussing childhood sexual abuse, presenting facts showing child abuse to be a pandemic, worldwide problem that affects everyone. The second goal, offering hope and healing through numerous paths, such as this show, providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. Again, if you are contemplating calling in and being a member of our panel, I would highly encourage you to do so. The number to call in is area code 646-595-2118. Without further ado, though, I'd like to let you know that besides my co-host, Pamela Lockridge, and our special guest, Natasha, we have Tamika from Oregon. We have Roberta from Oklahoma. And we have Tanisha from, I think it's Mississippi, MS. I'm going to have to go back to my elementary school looking at the abbreviations for our states. But I wish to thank our panel members for joining us. And you've got a lot of support on the line, Natasha, Ella. It's a nice panel, and it's growing. So before I bring Natasha on, I want to tell you a little bit about Natasha Mason from East Haven, Connecticut. She reports and she told us that her abuse began when she was 5 years old by her mother's boyfriend, who is also now her mother's current ex-husband. As Natasha explained in her bio, she basically wore a mask when she was home. She went with the flow of things, of how things went at home. Most of the time she spent in her room, or she would escape on the weekends at her grandmother's house whenever she could and occasionally go outside. But as time went on, the physical abuse began by her mother's boyfriend at the time. She feared for her safety and herself at night, especially the nights that he drank, because she didn't know what to expect when he came in. And so I'm going to stop right there. And before I bring Natasha on, now Pamela and I, we structure the special guest nights in a very specific way. We break the show. It's a 90-minute show, but we break it into three segments. The 90 minutes goes by very quickly, believe it or not. So the first segment, as Natasha comes on, is really about the most very early years, from earliest memory, a little context about her childhood, what her family of origin was like, up through about the age of 18. And then we break. The panel will have an opportunity to ask Natasha a question or maybe have a comment around her story. It is her night tonight. We then go back to Natasha. We then go through the middle years from about 18 to 30 or so, break to the panel one more time. And the third segment of the show, it's a lot about the healing process and what Natasha is doing in the present day. So that is how we roughly break up the show into three segments, just for some context. And without further ado, Natasha, I'm going to unmute your line. And Pamela and I wish to welcome you on this evening. You are on with us now, Natasha. So thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Well, you're very welcome. So, you know, and as Pamela had told you before we went on the show, this is your show. This is your night to tell your story. So you just do it at the pace that you wish, what you're comfortable with sharing. And if Pamela or if I ask you a question, or if a question comes from a panel member that you're not comfortable answering, you absolutely can stay in your comfort zone. But I'd like to just invite you now and ask you to help us give a little picture, a little context. From your earliest memory, from when you were born, you know, a little bit about your family, your earliest memories, you know, what your life was like, you know, who was in your family. Just paint a picture of you from your earliest years, if you wouldn't mind.
My earliest years. It was just me and my mom. There were times where I went to family members' house and was with, like, my cousins and became close with them. I would also go to my grandmother's house. I feel I had a happy childhood before the abuse started.
May I ask, so was your biological father someone that was you when you were born? Did you know him, spend time with him?
My biological father was in and out. I really didn't spend much time with him. I only actually, as a child, only remember spending time with him on three occasions. One of them, I was young, I was about three or four, and he took me to get strawberry ice cream cones. And then the next memory with him was I was about 13, and I was staying at my aunt's house at the time. And he came then and took me to go clothes shopping. Mm-hmm. And then after that, it was when I was an adult, after I had left California and came back to Connecticut. Those are the only three times that I remember spending time with him.
Okay.
And
so
he did know. No, I was just going to say he did know that the abuse was going on. I don't know when he found out, but I did know that he knew.
Thank you, Kay. Yeah, that's hard, right? When to, you know, it's hard sometimes to put these things into context in terms of time frames, but it's hard to know that you know, that there are parental figures out there that were aware, you know, of what was going on, especially during the time that we felt very alone.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it sounds like from you were born, it was you and your mother, and that you were, sounds like your mother was, you had a good relationship, you were close. It sounds like she was a nurturing mother.
Yes.
Did you have any other siblings? That you were
My siblings didn't come along until I was 12. I have. I have four sisters. I'm sorry. My throat is kind of scratchy. I have four sisters and a brother. And then I have three half-brothers and a half-sister.
Okay. So big family now. But until you were 12, you were basically an only child.
Yes.
Okay. And so were you, did your mother work? Were you cared for, you know, did you go to preschool? Were you cared for by relatives while she worked?
She worked.
You were about the age of five.
She worked, and I was in school. I don't remember when she stopped working, because as far as I could remember, she always kept a job, rather it was a temp agency or seasonal work. She always worked.
So it sounds like your mother, you know, provided you a very stable environment. You know, she was a working mother, but you were cared for. She was nurturing. You know, you were, it sounds like your life was almost, from an abuse standpoint, unremarkable. And then from your bio, your mother has a boyfriend and you're 5 years old.
Yes.
Okay. It's about and when he came into the picture, and whatever you're comfortable with.
Well, I don't have memory of when they started going out. The earliest memory I have is when he moved in. Not long after he moved in, he would come into my room. And he would just stand there and watch me. And the first time he did it, I had told my mom about it. And she had said, well, the next time he does it, call me. So when he came into my room the next time, and I had called out for her, and he left, I don't know what he said to her, but she never came to my room to see what was going on. And that morning, I didn't say anything to her about it, and she never asked me anything about it. And then it happened again. But when it happened again, he told me to stop yelling. And then it went from him just watching me to him fondling me. After fondling, it went after a while of fondling, it went into sex.
Mm-hmm. And you were 5 years old. And you were 5 years old when this started.
I was 5 years old when it started. And that continued. Go ahead.
No, I was going to ask, you know, did you feel after the first time that you reached out to your mother and she, after he came to your room the first time and just stared at you and she said, if that happens again, you let me know. And then it sounds in terms of communication between the boyfriend and your mother that the next time that you try to initiate a conversation with your mother about it, you were shut down in a way. And that line of communication that you thought you had, if you were being compromised, was... So it sounds like you just lost that ability to communicate with your mother, and wondering how that made you feel, how you felt at the time when this all started happening, and you no longer felt like you had your mother's ear.
I felt that if I told her what was going on, that she would not have believed me. Because, like I said, I don't know what he told her the first time when he went back in the room. And then I was also afraid to say anything because I didn't know what he would do to me.
Right.
And how I ended up telling her, I was about 7, and we was living in Massachusetts at the time, and she was getting me dressed for school, and I guess she had a feeling that something was going on, and she asked me, was he touching me? And I told him yes. I mean, I told her yes. She talked to his mother about it because we were staying with her at the time. And when he came in, his mother was saying something to him about it. And they started fighting, and he pushed his mom down the stairs.
Oh, my God.
After that, my mother had took me, and we went back to Connecticut, and we stayed with my grandmother for a while. I don't know what happened or what was said, but she ended up back with him, but I had stayed at my grandmother's house for a few years. When she had gotten her apartment not that far from where my grandmother lived at, and at this point, I was going to school and everything from my grandmother's house. And then what happened was one day coming home from school, I had got hit by a car. And my aunt went to my mom's house to let my mom know what was going on. And she... We went to the hospital, and she asked me if I wanted to go to her house or back to my grandmother. So I wanted to go to her house to be with her. I didn't know the abuse was going to continue. What happened was she took me to her house, but because she only had one bed, and the other room didn't have a bed or anything for me to lay on, she had called my grandmother to come pick me up so I could go back to my grandmother's house. And I stayed at my grandmother's house until my mom had the furniture for my room. Um, when I moved in with my mom, not long after that, the abuse continued. He would come into my room at night when my mom was asleep, or when she was out of the house and it was just me and him there. And he would threaten me not to say anything. So I was afraid to say anything.
Well, of course I can. I mean, of course you were. He pushed his own mother down the stairs. How could you not have been afraid? See that your mother was affected, even though your mother was asleep when he would then, you know, he obviously kept abusing you. Do you think she suspected, even though she was asleep and she, you know, didn't have any, obviously, firsthand knowledge of it from witnessing it with her own eyes, but do you think that she suspected it because he'd had this pattern previously?
She was also being abused as well. She was being physically abused. I had seen a couple of times where he had physically abused her. And then there were stories she would tell me. Like when I got older, she would tell me about some of the abuse, or I would hear conversations. She would have one of my aunts, and that's how I had found out that he was abusing her. So I don't know if she didn't do anything because she feared what would happen to her, or I can't say that she wasn't aware of it, because I know that she was. But like I said, it continued when I moved in with my mom. And then when we moved to another street in Connecticut. And I had made friends with some neighbors. And this particular night, one of the girls that I was friends with wanted me to go to the store. Her mom wanted me to go to the store with her. So we had went to the store. And while we was out at the store getting her mom's grocery list, we started talking about this particular boy that I knew. So we went to look for the boy because I had wanted to ask him some questions. So what happened was we were standing at the corner of the apartment building and we were talking. And my mom comes down the street with my little sister at the time. And when I saw her and when the girl I was with saw her, we all, like, ran. And so she was like, okay, I'm not going to chase after you. So she turned around and started going back to the apartment. So I'm talking to my friend, and I'm like, oh, I know I'm going to get in trouble when I get home, and I might as well just go now or whatever. But before I could leave, she came back with the car because her boyfriend at the time had came home. So she got into his car and came down to where we were and told me to get in the car, and I got in the car. She ended up telling him what was going on, and what happened was he came in my room in the middle of the night slapping me in the face. Asking me who was the boys that I was with and what were we talking about. And while he's asking me these questions, he's slapping me. And then he took his rope that I used to play double dutch with. It was like a clothesline rope. And he put it around my neck. And I blacked out. And when I came to, I was sitting on the floor. And he was taking the rope from around my neck. And that was the first time the physical abuse started.
Yeah.
And I was about 13 at that time.
I want to thank you for sharing that with us, because Pamela and I talk about this a lot. You know, when you share your story, you know, you are giving part of yourself. It's you're reliving the trauma, and it's painful. It's very painful to talk about it and to relive those events. But it's also a gift that you're giving to me, to Pamela, to everybody listening. We've got a very robust panel, by the way. We have three other panel members joined us. Because when you tell your story and you share your experience and you say your truth, as difficult as it is, it takes courage, and it's inspiring for many of us that have maybe have slightly different stories, but a lot of times the feelings are the same, and it helps. You know, it helps so many people when you share what has happened to you. So I really want to say thank you. And I understand. I have walked in very similar experiences to yours, and I understand how difficult it can be to talk about it. I wanted to let you know that we've got such a large panel. I'd like to break the panel right now. Before I do that, I just want to remind those on our panel, I want to thank them for calling in and remind them that you, when we bring you on, you have an opportunity to ask Natasha a question, or you may have a comment around her story. It is her night. I'm going to bring on Pamela. Before I bring on Pamela, I want to thank Pamela and Mark, and her husband, Mark Lockridge, as well. I was out of the country the last two Mondays, and they did cover for me in my absence. So I really wanted to thank them. And I also believe that John Anderson was also helping Pamela and Mark, from my understanding. So I want to wish to thank John. He's on the phone on the panel right now as well.
You're
so
welcome.
I want to say thank you. Thank you. And Pamela, I want to turn it over to you.
Yes. Natasha, the first thing I want to ask you is there any way we can turn down the background sounds, because this is taped and we're hearing too much background noise. If you can't do anything, that's fine. I just wanted to ask you if there's any way we could do that, because we want to hear your story and we're hearing a lot of background noise.
Okay.
But also,
is that better?
I also want to.
Yeah, it sounds like a television.
Yeah. I also want to thank you for coming on the show. I applaud you for, you know, your bravery. And I know that you're probably here so that others can know they're not alone. And I am just flabbergasted and disgusted with what that man did to you as a little child that was defenseless. And, you know, coming to put something around your neck and practically kill you. I mean, that is just so horrific. And that trauma probably still gives you flashbacks. Do you still have flashbacks from that?
I haven't had any flashbacks in at least about 4 years.
Awesome. Okay, that's all I wanted to ask. There's many, many people on the panel, so I'm not going to take up your story time. Thank you, Penelope.
Thank you, Pamela. So I'm going to bring on Tamika from Oregon. And Tamika, I've unmuted your line, and you are on with Natasha.
Hi, Natasha. Again, this is Tamika Chambers, and I want to thank you so much for sharing your story, as others have done so thus far. Just hearing you bravely speak about what happened, that people need to hear that. I, too, was abused by family members starting at the age of 5. So I know from my point of view, the, you know, things that happen, and you're just kind of shocked, and you're looking for other people, other adults to be there for you. And I just want to thank you so much again for sharing your story. And I appreciate you being here tonight.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Tamika. Thank you for calling in, and thank you for your support of Natasha. I'm going to put you back on listen-only mode, and I'm going to invite Tanisha on, and hopefully I'm not butchering any names, from, I think it's Mississippi. Tanisha, you are on with Natasha.
Hey, Natasha. This is Tanisha Bankston. I just want to say thank you for your bravery, and thank you for sharing your testimony. And that you're not alone. Like, I too am a survivor of abuse, and you just helped me. You just helped me on in everything. And it's sad that we don't get believed and nothing gets done by the ones we think should protect us. But you went from a victim to a survivor, and I just want to say I applaud you for that, and thank you for your bravery. And I'm here to support you.
Thank you.
Oh, so heartfelt. Thank you, Tanisha. I'm going to put you back on.
You're welcome.
And it's Mississippi, isn't it, MS?
Yes, Mississippi.
Okay, good. I don't have to go back to that part of my geography lessons. Good. All right. Put you back on listen-only mode. And I'm going to invite Roberta from Oklahoma. Roberta, I've unmuted your line, and you are on with Natasha.
Hello, Natasha. This is Roberta.
Hello.
Hello. I just wanted to thank you for, you know, having the courage, like she was talking about bravery and everything, for talking and sharing. And I'm a survivor, but I don't know all my story. I mean, you know, I'm still going through the healing process, but you know, it's just sometimes when things are too traumatic, it's just not time, you know, to know them things, I guess. But what I wanted to ask you is whenever you were, like, from 5 to about 13, did and the things that happened, did that affect your schoolwork, or did anyone at school know you were being abused?
No, no one at school knew. School was like my escape. So,
I can relate to that.
Yeah, so, okay, well, no, my grades, it didn't affect my grades or anything.
Yeah, I can relate to that. But it all caught up with me whenever I got to be about 16. I got my GED. But I'm just really glad that you survived, and I think that I'd like to listen to more of what you have to say, and thank you.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, Roberta. What a great question. Back on listen only mode. And John Anderson, Louisiana, is also on our panel with us this evening. So, John, if you wish to ask Natasha a question or have a comment for her, the mic is yours.
Thank you. Natasha, how are you today, darling? You doing okay?
I'm well.
Yeah. I tell you what, you're doing an awesome job tonight. I know how tough it is to come out and tell a story like this in front of a lot of people you don't know all over the world. You know, they could be listening to you right now. And I think the biggest thing for me right now is that I'm just pissed off. I'm so pissed at this asshole. Excuse my language. Got away with this stuff with you when you were so young. You know, it just boils me down to the bone that he got away with this for so long. And I hate to hear this more than anything in the world, you know, because we were all survivors here. And we've been through so much, you know, all of us have. But in your situation, man, if you look at about every avenue that there is, you know, when it comes down to what we do, from, you know, the child abuse to being a victim and prevention, recovery, physical, mental, it's all there with you. Every bit of it is there with you. And some people that get abused in certain ways don't. I hate to say see that side of things or let's say even experience those side of things. You have seen about every corner of everything that we do, you know. And for you to come out and tell everything that you're telling us tonight is so crucial to the future of these kids. And I don't know if you realize that every time that either one of us comes out and tells a different story that might not be the same as somebody else's, you're helping an entire corner, you know, of the world that had that type of abuse like you did, because they can reflect, you know, they've been in that situation, and you're explaining it in detail just like they live it, because that's the truth. That's the way it happens, you know. And you're helping so many people by coming out tonight. You have no idea, no idea. I've already gotten a few phone calls while I've been sitting here, you know, since your story started. And they are like, I can't believe it. I just can't believe this happened this morning. You know, I said, well, you know, it is what it is. It's the truth, you know. And you can't be affiliated with any better organization than who you are with tonight. I can promise you that. Because, you know, I don't know if you know this or not, with me, I'm a 45-year survivor, okay? And this is your night. But I do want to let you know that I speak to so many, I can't even put a number on it, numbers and numbers of victims around the world. I'm a vice president of one organization. I was a leader of SNAP in New Orleans for a while, too. And every time that I hear a story like yours, you know, it really makes me reflect on a whole other world of abuse that is within the household, you know, that should be your safest place to be in this world. And when that's violated, then the rest of your world is violated, you know. So I know that we were around the area when you hit 12 or 13, and I can't wait to hear the rest of your story. And Penelope, it's good to have you back, and I hope that the rest of your night goes great. Okay, Natasha?
Thank you.
And I can tell you this, baby, that we love you, okay? And you hang in there.
Okay, thank you.
All right.
Oh, thank you, John, and so well stated. I echo everything that he said. I just can't say it as well. So that's what we have our NASCA family, right? So I'm going to bring on Doug. So we have Doug from Maryland who's called to support you, Natasha. So, Doug, I've unmuted your line, and you are on with Natasha. Thanks for joining us this evening.
Yes, hi. I just want to say thank you for sharing your story. You are heard. And yes, it's important. It's important that we keep sharing our stories and networking for the healing process, so we all know that we're not alone. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Doug. It's so true. Okay, I'm going to put your line back on listen-only mode, and I'm going to bring on our NASCA sister, Mary Ellen from New York. Mary Ellen, you're on with Natasha.
Good evening. Hi, Natasha. Nice to meet you. Thank you for sharing with us tonight. I'm so impressed by the large panel we have, and welcome back, Penelope.
Thank you.
Natasha, I just want you to know that I'm here to support you, and you're doing a wonderful job sharing, and I don't want to hold up the line right now, so I'm just going to wish you the best with the rest of your evening, and maybe I'll speak a little later, okay?
Okay, thank you.
Well, thank you, Mary Ellen, and thank you for joining us this evening.
You're welcome.
I'll put you back on listen-only mode, and so that has taken us to the end of our panel for the first segment. Hopefully we'll have an opportunity to revisit the panel again. We are, believe it or not, Natasha, it's a 90-minute show, but we're almost halfway over, almost 45 minutes in, believe it or not. So it goes by fast. But I wanted to just invite you to pick up where you left off, where you're comfortable. And I know we left it at you at 13 years of age, and with that just absolutely horrific account of your stepfather's rage and his attempt really to murder you. Really there are no words to describe how angry I am at that little girl, that 13-year-old girl, for her, that she had to experience all that she had experienced up until that age. But I'm going to turn it back over to you so I can calm down and let you pick it up from there, and just let us know, you know, what happened from there, and take us until you're about 30 years old, if you're okay with that.
So what happened was, not long after that, like about a year or so after that happened, we ended up moving to California. We were staying at a shelter at first. When we first got to California, I wasn't feeling well. I was sick, and found out that I was pregnant. We ended up leaving the shelter and staying at a motel. And what happened was, for the first 6 months, he made sure that I wouldn't go anywhere so I wouldn't have an abortion. So when I realized that I was going to have the baby, I have a strong spiritual background. So I would pray that when I see my child, that I wouldn't have any anger towards him because of how he was conceived. And I would pray that every day until I gave birth to him. And what happened after that was my abuser ended up being arrested and getting extradited from California to Connecticut. So we had to leave from California and come back to Connecticut because he had some charges or something he had to face in Connecticut. So while he was incarcerated, we stayed at my grandmother's house. He ended up going to a halfway house. And what happened was, on the weekends, we would go to a hotel, me, my mom, my little sister and my son at the time, and my abuser. So we would be at the hotel on the weekends. And this particular weekend, they sent me to Burger King to get some food. And on the way coming back, I had stopped at a payphone to call one of my friends. And while I was on the phone talking to one of my friends, my abuser walks up and he started hitting me. We got into the room. He hit me again. I ended up having a knot on my forehead. So when we got back to my grandmother's house, she had asked me, was everything okay with me? And at first, I said, yeah. Then she was getting ready because my grandmother was a pastor, and she traveled a lot, speaking in different places. She was getting ready to go speak in North Carolina, and it was just me and her in the house. And she came and sat next to me, and she was like, I know something's wrong. And I ended up telling her everything that had happened. And I didn't think she was going to call and talk to, I don't know if it was a parole officer or probation officer he had from the halfway house. And I got on the phone and he asked me, was everything true that my grandmother had told him? And I said, yes. So what they did was they put him back in jail. They sent the detective out to take my statement. Not long after that, my mom, I had an address book that had all my male friends' name and phone number in it. And my mom had found it. And she said that if I didn't drop the charges, she was going to give that book to his attorney to let them know I wasn't an angel. So because I didn't want everybody that I knew knowing my business, I ended up dropping the charges. And he ended up going back to the halfway house. Not long after that, they came and picked me up from school. I was in high school at this time. They came and picked me up from school, and we started driving on the highway, and no one said where we were going. And then after about an hour of driving, he was like, we're going back to California. So we ended up back in California. But going back to California, before we left, I found out that I was pregnant again, but it was not by him. And one thing that I realized was that while I was pregnant, he would threaten me, but he wouldn't hit me. So after I had my second child, at this point, we were in an apartment in California. And the rule was when he turned out the living room TV, I had to go in the living room with him because at this point, he wasn't sleeping in the bedroom with my mom. He was sleeping on the living room couch. And at this time, I had already given birth to my daughter. And when I came in the room this particular night, he had grabbed me by my neck. And he told me that because I had a child by somebody else, he thought about shooting me up with heroin. And the only reason why he didn't is because he didn't want to do too much and I overdosed, or too little and it didn't have an effect on me. When he told me that, I was already terrified because he was already telling me threats of different ways of how he would kill me. So when I turned 18, I was going to leave and come back to Connecticut, but I wasn't going to tell him. But what happened was, around that same time, my aunt had came to California from Connecticut. And she came and stayed with us. I had like a journal that I had wrote things in that was going on, and she found it and read it. And I don't know why, after reading what was in there, she went and told him. I don't know what was said, what he said to her. All I know was she left not that long after. I know that day he caught me in the room and he started slapping me and threatening me because he thought I told her what was going on when I didn't. She read it from what I had wrote down. It went from that to like that whole time living in that apartment for a couple of years was like one of the worst of abuse that happened, because it was like if he wasn't hitting me, he was hitting my mom, and you didn't know when it would happen. You would get up, well, I would get up in the middle of the night to get something to drink, and the living room would be dark. And all of a sudden, a hit out of nowhere. So after a few years of that, we moved to another area. He started working. And I started going to church. He and my mom would do drugs. They was doing crack on the weekends. And it started out as a weekend thing, and I think that my mom used that as her outlet of dealing with what was going on. After a while, he ended up stopped doing the crack, but she stayed addicted to it. While that was going on, I was also taking care of my sister and brothers, and then I had more children by him. I had 4 children in total by him. My second child was from someone else. So at that time, I had a total of 5 children, and then my 4 sisters and my brother, I was taking care of.
Can you give us an age? I'm sorry to interrupt you, Natasha. Can you give us, so you had 5 children, 4 from him, and can you let us know after your 5th child was born, how old, where you are chronologically in your age?
I had my first child when I was 14. My second child, I was 16. I was 19 with my third child and 21 with my fourth. And 23. I want to say 23 with the fifth.
And then you're also caring for your siblings as well.
Yes.
Wow. So we're an hour into the show now, practically. We have 33 minutes remaining. I know we're at the age of 23. Would you be okay, though, if I broke to the panel again one more time before we went to the last segment? Because you've given us a lot. You've given us a lot. And obviously, you know, your testimony to the continued abuse, and I'm sorry to say, but with your mom, and I'm not sure, I think you do have a relationship with your mother today, but I know she was also being abused by your stepfather, if you will, but your mother was neglectful of you, and I think that's a very hard thing as a child in my own experience. I'm not sure which has been more penetrating and enduring, the sexual abuse, the abuse from father, or the neglect from my mother. That is hard. But I'd like to break to the panel if you're okay with that right now.
That's fine.
Okay, Pamela, I'd like to invite you back in to have a question or a comment for Natasha.
Yes, Natasha. This is quite the story. Every time I think I've heard the worst one, I hear another one that's worse than the last. Not to question you, but to just for clarification, what was the dynamic in the home that kept you there? Why didn't you ever think to run away or to go to, there was just nowhere to get, no safe haven anywhere? Okay, go ahead.
Well, in California, we had no family. And the only people that I knew at that time was at the church. And there was a couple of times where I left, but I ended up coming back. Because my grandmother could only help me financially, but for so long. And I knew it was a matter of time before he found me.
It was kind of like domestic violence situation. But your mom did marry this man at some point, didn't she?
Well, no, she didn't marry him. What happened was she was using his last name. And when she went to transfer her driver's license to her maiden name, they told her because she was with him for so many years that they acknowledged common law marriage. And in order for her to change her driver's license to her maiden name, she would have to go to court and file for divorce, which is what she did.
So was there any way back at that time to accuse him of the pregnancies that the rape he did on you, you know, to get you pregnant?
I never pressed any charges. I was afraid to.
Because you were so fearful of him, right?
Right.
And they had let him out of prison the last time, and you had to drop the charges and everything. So it was just a very complicated and hard situation to figure out, especially at your young age. And he was threatening your life.
Yeah.
So who put up the money to take care of all your babies? Who did somebody work in the home? Did you work?
My abuser worked, and I was getting state assistance.
Okay. All righty. Well, thank you for answering my questions. You know, it is, you know, just tough when women don't have any options. But this is probably back at a time when there weren't many options for women who were in domestic violence situations, right?
Yeah. Actually, when I left, well, I'll say when I continue my story, but I did try to get into a DV shelter, and it didn't happen. But
okay. Well, we'll get it. Penelope will get to that later in the story. Thank you for answering my question, Natasha. Thank you for going into this deep, you know, dark place with us tonight for us to understand. Because the more we hear, the more we understand how to help women, you know.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
But I'm so sorry you went through that.
Thank you, Pamela. I'm going to bring on Tanika from Oregon. And Tanika, I've opened up your line. You're back on with Natasha.
Hi, Natasha. The first things that I wanted to say, and it was actually going to be the only thing I said, is that I'm glad you're alive. I am glad that you are here, because just hearing your story, not being a part of it, but just hearing your story, it takes a lot of courage to continue to move forward in life the best way that you know how. And so I know one of the things that you mentioned was that you had a strong spiritual background. You had a mother, grandmother who was a pastor. What was there any Bible verses, spiritual talk? What kept you going from day to day, not knowing whether you would be hit or physically abused or sexually abused, emotionally? I didn't hear any. Well, there is emotional abuse, but what kept you going? What was the thing that you told yourself when you would experience that? What did you leave with the night before, you know, as you laid down in bed? What did you tell yourself when you woke up? What did you tell yourself? How did you keep moving forward?
There wasn't a one particular verse, but I constantly stayed in reading my word. I always prayed. I always went to church. But I kept in mind that one day I was going to leave. That's what I kept telling myself.
Okay. And one more thing, because I know we're running into the time for this conversation, you know, tonight to be done. But one of the things that that is hard for many people that have been through sexual abuse, and you mentioned it, was a spiritual grounding, that many people they don't believe in God, or they feel, and I don't want to make this about religion, and it's up, you're up to discussing it, but what do you think, did this strengthen your relationship with God, or do you feel like, were the times that you questioned if there was a God?
I never questioned if there was a God. I questioned why me. I questioned whether or not he would hear in my prayers. And like I said, I just kept thinking that one day I was going to leave. Either I was going to leave or he was going to die. Because to be honest, there were times when I prayed for him to die.
thank you for sharing that. You're not alone. You are not alone. I, too, came from a spiritual background, and I had the same questions. Why me? What can you make them stop? You know, so that I think that really, if anyone is listening, that opened the door for, yes, you will question, and yes, it's still possible to keep that spiritual grounding because you said you continue to pray. Thank you for sharing that. Thank you.
Thank you, Tamika. Great question. So I'm going to put you back on listen-only mode, and I'm going to bring on Tanisha from Mississippi. And Tanisha, you're back on with Natasha. Oh, Tanisha, you're back on with Natasha, if you're there.
Tanisha, is your phone muted?
Hi, yes, the phone had actually went out. I don't know what happened. But I just want to commend you for your bravery, and I heard you say that you questioned God, like, why you? And it's like you're just telling your story through, like, we have the same similar background and story and everything. It's just like I'm hearing it through a different person, and God, it's like God said, why not me? And I'm going to share this song that's by Tasha Page Lockhart. Why she asked God, why her, but why not me? And just keep your faith and keep believing. And God uses, I always tell people, God uses his weakest people to become his strongest people, because we have a calling on us. And that's to serve and to help the next person who's going through what we've gone through. And I just want to just stay strong and keep being positive and doing what you're doing.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, that was beautiful, Tanisha. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I'm going to put you back on listen only mode. And Roberta from Oklahoma. Roberta, I'm bringing you back on with Natasha.
Hello. Natasha, I said your name right?
Yeah.
Natasha.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. Yeah. I just have a couple of questions. What is your age now?
I'll be 49 in September.
And so do you still have contact with your abusers or your children or anything?
I have no contact with my abuser. I am in contact with my first child. My second child lives in Connecticut with me, so I do have contact with her and my two granddaughters. I just started having contact with one of my daughters, because what happened was when I left, I took all my kids with me, but then I ended up giving them to him, and I'm going to give away the whole thing, but because of that, my two daughters had some resentment towards me, and they haven't spoken to me since they were 18 and 16.
I have another question. Even from your earliest memories up until that point, up until, now, did you ever have any thoughts of suicide?
I did. I tried to take my life twice. I was about 16 the first time. I was at my grandmother's house. Everything was going on about before when he had got arrested and everything. And I just took some prescription medication of my grandmother's. I don't even know what it was for. And I took a handful of it, and I didn't think I was going to wake up. And I did. The second time, I was in my early 20s. I was in California. And I was taking some medication for my throat. And I took a handful of pills. And once again, I did not think I was going to wake up. And I did.
I'm glad you woke up.
Thank you, Roberta. And Natasha, thank you for answering those questions. And I think you're not alone. I think this is a very common to, go through those periods of time, and many of us have had suicide attempts because it's, when the pain is overwhelming, it just seems like the only option. But I'm certainly glad that you're still here.
Yeah.
Roberta, thank you. I'm going to put you back on
listen
only mode. And John, I'm going to invite you back in the conversation.
Thank you. Okay, Natasha. Basically, my head is like spinning right now, okay? You have been through so much in your life, girl. And really, I hope that the end of this story comes out a lot better than the first. But I do want to just throw some things at you where some of the things we went over tonight, I have to kind of reflect on with everyone that's in attendance tonight. Do you have anybody supporting you tonight, by the way? Does anybody else know you're on tonight?
Well, I sent them the link. I don't know if they're on.
Okay. They could be listening. Mm-hmm. Well, if anyone is out there and you all friends of Natasha, y'all please be there for her. Okay. I just think, God, that you're alive today, number one. I mean, that is just huge, everything that you've been through and where you are today. And I think there's a huge lesson really to be learned from all of this, between the cocaine and heroin and granddaughters. I mean, there's only so much time left, Natasha, so I don't know what your future plans are, but I hope that maybe you can find, some really good, like Tanisha said, positive people, positive stuff in your life now, to move on and turn your life around and you're 49. So, you've lived probably half your life, and I hope that the second half is going to be so much better than the first. Okay. And hey, if you're talking with your daughters, some of it can be, very traumatizing at times, and I hope you can just make it through that. And I don't want to take too much of your time. We only have about 15 minutes left, so just take care of yourself, girl, and know that you can call us anytime, okay?
Okay, thank you.
All right.
Thank you, John. And I'm going to bring on Mary Ellen. Mary Ellen, I'm unmuting your line, and you're back on with Natasha.
Yeah, like John just said, we're running out of time, so I don't want to hold up. But I liked what he said about let's move forward and make the rest of our lives a happy story. So I wish that for everybody, that we've come to a point where we are looking forward and seeing the beauty of this world. So I know it's a struggle, but that's my prayer for all of us. Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you, Mary Ellen. Thank you. And I put you back on listen only mode. And Natasha, we are down to 14 minutes left, and the 14 minutes are yours. I'd like to hear, where you are today and where life has brought you. From 23 to the present time, and I know 14 minutes is not a lot of time for you to tell us the rest of your story, and I'd like to focus on the fact that you're here, and in your bio you did say, even though you did not get out of the abuse until you were 28 years old, you give detail in your book, which is entitled The Secret Everyone Knew. So you've reached quite a bit, and I'm going to turn it over to you.
Okay, 15 minutes. After I left, I actually, before I left, let me do this right quick. Before I left, I felt that if I didn't leave, he was going to kill me. And I believe he felt that as well, because this particular night he told me that one day I'm going to make him so angry that he don't know what he's going to do to me. That particular night, he picked up a weight, and it was like he was about to throw it at me, and I screamed. What I didn't know was that my sister had climbed out her room window and went to the payphone at the corner to call the police. They came and arrested him. He ended up getting out, but eventually I ended up leaving. What happened was it was a regular day. I was waiting for the kids to come home from school, and the Lord spoke to me and said, take your kids and go. So I was like, okay, Lord, if this is you, I don't have no money to make the funds available. So I was telling my sister what was going on. And my daughter overheard me, and she said, well, Ma, I could go return my cheerleading uniform and get the money back from it. So I asked her how much it was. It was $30. So she went to the school and returned the uniform. And while she was doing that, I was on the phone with Greyhound trying to find out where I could go with five children for $30. I ended up getting a one-way ticket for me and my children to go to Riverside, California, and have $5 left over. When I got there, I did call 211 to find out about domestic violence shelters in the area, and I was told if I didn't have any bruises, they wasn't going to take me. So she gave me an address of a shelter, of a regular shelter that was in that area, and it was this particular cab driver who said that shelter don't open until November. This was the beginning of October. Long story short, a church ended up paying for me and my children to go to Connecticut to my grandmother's house, and we went there. What happened was he kept calling my grandmother's house and threatening them. So I said, okay, finally I'll talk to him so they wouldn't have to deal with him. And my mindset at that point was whatever he wanted, I would say okay, just to keep him from calling. So when I got on the phone with him, he said, whoever wants to come back to California, I'm going to come and get them. A decision that I regret even to this day. I told him, okay. So he ended up coming to Connecticut, and they wanted to go back. So he took all my children, except for my daughter that wasn't his. He took the rest of them back to California. And what he did was when he got to California, first he filed for a protection order, and then he filed for full custody, which he ended up getting, and I was required to pay child support of $900 a month, which at the time I was only working in the mall, so I couldn't even afford the $900 a month. Speeding up to currently, 2017 is when I finished my book, and it was published, The Secret That Everyone Knew and the Purpose of me writing the book was because I knew there were stories like mine out there, and I didn't hear them. I wanted people who experienced what I experienced to know that they wasn't alone. I'm also working on a workshop that's coming up soon. It's a self-care workshop. And the reason why I developed the self-care workshop is because when I was speaking at different places, I noticed that women in general that went through abuse didn't like seeing themselves in the mirror. So my self-care workshop is more of mental healing to get you to that place to where you can say, okay, I love myself, and today I'm going to do me. And that workshop will be coming out in October, as well as some other things I'm working on.
So, Natasha, do you have a website for your workshop? Do you have a website? I know that we have the title of your book, which is The Secret Everybody Knew.
Yes.
But do you have
I do have a website. It is the, and then it's a line. It's basically The Secret Everyone Knew, but it's a line between the, between secret, between everyone, between new, and then it's dot. I'm gonna tell you right now.
So, are you still with us?
Doc. Site.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay, so can you put that one
by
more time?
Email is the, and then it's a line, like a straight line, not a horizontal line, but a straight line. Then it's secret, then it's another line, then everyone, then another line, then new. Then it's dot square dot site.
Okay. Thank you. So we can definitely get online and take a look at that. That is incredible. Did you go through a specific healing process to get to that point? It sounds like you've also gone through a journey of, you know, self-love, which I think is really hard a lot of times for us as, you know, child abuse survivors to really go through that process of learning to love ourselves. But I'm just curious as to what your healing process and journey looks like. You're obviously doing a lot of incredible things.
Most of my healing came from writing my book. But it was going through some issues in my marriage that I started looking at me and getting to know me and loving me. And that's where a lot of the rest of the healing came from.
Are you involved actively in church as well?
I am.
In the present time? I know you said your faith helps you a lot.
I am. Actually, my pastor and first lady is on listening now.
Wonderful.
Bless their heart.
And
that's great.
But they are so proud of you. They are so proud of you, as we all are.
Yeah. They should be.
Thank you.
Absolutely. 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 And it sounds that you are also married today.
Well, no, today I'm divorced, but I was married in 2007, I got married. I went through some stuff. it was more of verbal abuse and that. Till it got to the point where I didn't want to deal with it anymore. And I left in 2019. And 2020 is when the divorce was finalized.
Well, you are a woman of incredible, incredible strength. Absolutely incredible strength. And I just, and I was, this was resonating with me even from the very beginning. But as I heard your story, a lot of emotions, obviously, for a lot of us, we were processing through a lot of different emotions. But, you know, the one thing that I kept coming back to was, as you kept speaking, as mortified and as angry as I was, and as much as I was hurting for that, for you, every time I came back to gratitude, and I know that Tanika Morgan had said it as well, but just gratitude that you are who you are. I mean, that you're here, that you're, you know, you're telling your testimony, your strength and your courage. And I just kept coming back to, I have so much gratitude for you. And I'm just so thrilled to hear about not only your book, but your workshops, your self-care workshops, and really how you're sharing who you are with everyone else. Because you're helping so many other people, and you're giving us that gift of your what your you know how you've survived and just how your faith and your strength and that is really what resonated with me and continues to resonate with me as I hear your story and especially what you're doing today. So I wish to thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Oh, you're welcome.
Natasha,
I'm
sorry.
No, go on.
I was just going to ask Natasha if she's going to be working around the church at all. Maybe.
Probably.
Okay. All right.
Probably.
Yeah, since you got your divorce final, now it's time to close all those doors, girl, you know. Time to move on and stay on that road, okay?
Yes.
Nice meeting you, too.
Same here.
Give us a couple words that you want to leave us with in closing. Just a few words, Natasha. And then I've unmuted everybody's mic. And so after you give us a couple words, we're all going to give you a round of applause and our gratitude and our thanks for having you on tonight. And for you sharing your story with us.
All I wanted to say is, if anyone is listening that knows someone that's gone through any type of abuse, whether it is domestic violence or child abuse, please support that person. Encourage them, give them resources so that they can get out. And if a child comes to you saying that something happened, believe them, because a lot of children don't come forward because they don't feel that they're going to be believed.
That's right.
That's right.
So,
absolutely. We wish to thank you. Thank you so much, Natasha, on behalf of NASCA. And our show is now concluded,
yes.
So let's just say good evening. And I want to remind everybody listening tonight, if you see something, say something. It is all of our responsibility to protect our children. Thank you and good night.
Yeah.
You are forgotten after all that you've done. Blog Talk Radio.